Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Michael Jordan doing Michael Jordan things. The Astros, what in the world are they doing? Also, we continue our sideline series on booster culture and college sports in conjunction with Banner Society. We'll talk to Marcus Spears of ESPN today, but first. NBA action. It is fantastic, and it is coming back. This is, you know, as we are recording this, the season starts tonight. I am one of those basketball guys. I love it. The basketball is back. But damn, it feel early. Like middle of October, it's barely even cold outside. We already talking about basketball? I'm not even like fully in football swing. We ain't even gone far enough in football to tell who's good. But basketball is here, and this is necessary, of course, because, you know, load management and stuff like that, the back-to-back games and everything else. So I get it, right? Like, we need to get this going so we can stretch the season out a little bit longer, right? You know, get guys healthier, more rested, better quality basketball. Kind of caught snake eyes on the opening game of the season this year. We got the Raptors and we got the Pelicans. And the expectation, of course, you got to put the Raptors on. They the champs, right? And then you get the Pelicans, and you don't have to put them on, but they got Zion, right? So that was a perfect play. Perfect play. Because the problem for the Raptors, I mean, I don't know if problem's the right way to put it, but it's just sort of a reality of the situation, which is that we don't really rock with them in the United States. Like, they had Vince Carter. I think we was watching them on TV then. But otherwise, man, we don't really be watching Toronto on television. That's why in the playoffs, they the NBA TV All-Stars, man. They're like, if ain't nobody going to watch it, put it on the channel that don't nobody watch. Like, that's the way that they go about this. But they had Kawhi. They got, okay, cool. They ain't got Kawhi no more. In fact, Gabe, do you know who they do have?
Pascal Siakam.
They do have Siakam. I'm looking forward to seeing Siakam, but I don't think America is just ready to see Siakam. You think America is just ready to see Kyle Lowry get that ring?
Ready to see him shed some tears in what could be his final year. Probably going to be on the trade block later in the year.
Oh, God, there is that. Marc Gasol still play for them?
He does.
Yeah, he's kind of old. He's still over there. But, you know, they ain't nobody you really want to tune in and watch. And I think the Pelicans have a very interesting roster. They did as well with the Anthony Davis trade as anybody has ever done in a trade for a superstar, right? Like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when the Bucks traded him to the Lakers, the Bucks got a pretty good haul for him. I know they got at least 2 players whose jerseys were ultimately retired. That was about as good as you could expect a franchise to do under those circumstances, man. The whatchamacallums, the Pelicans got a bunch, and they got all them picks and swaps and everything that's coming down the line. But that don't mean nobody feel like watching them on television tonight. And the difference between the NBA and the NFL, and I guess baseball is here too, is really the difference between the NFL and everybody else. But the difference is it don't really matter what NFL team you throw out here. Like, you tell us, who, don't matter who the Super Bowl is, right? Super Bowl beat 2 teams ain't nobody ever heard of. We still gonna watch the Super Bowl because that's what we do. We watch the Super Bowl. Basketball is very dependent upon matchups. Basketball is very dependent upon individual players. Like, that's the kind of thing that's gonna get us to watch. Pelicans, Raptors. It's gonna be a little tumbleweedy. In some ways, in watching that game. They're going to be crunk up there in Toronto. If this game was on the weekend, I'd have gone up there, man. I know it's going to be bumping. They excited. They got them a championship. They think we're going to treat them like they Americans. Whole nine. All of it going there. But Zion's not playing because Zion has the torn meniscus. And look, man, we all understand that what we're dealing with Zion is like against the physics of it all. A man that size, jumping and landing, bringing that much body weight onto his joints. We are all a little fearful about, like, how this goes for him long term. And I think that, I mean, none of us expected necessarily that he'd be playing like this at 35 or anything like that. Like, you know, guys normally, I'm trying to think how many years, like, the average jumping jack gets where this is the way that he plays. Because normally them cats figure out that this ain't the way to go, and they start playing a lot more perimeter basketball. But see, the difference between Zion and most of these guys that we think of in this context, part of it, again, is that he's bigger, and so we have a different concern about, like, what the wear and tear is going to be. But the other part is that he's bigger, which means that the physical load that he would have to withstand of going to the basket, he can take more of that than, say, Vince Carter could. When that was the way that he played, you know, like Vince was like, yo, I need to get out here and shoot these threes. Zion is like, they can never stop me from getting to the basket. I'll continue going to the basket. Like, we have this concern. But I wonder, have I talked about this yet, Gabe? Have I talked to you about my concept that we need to have a breakdown for Hall of Famers in sports for what I call Rock and Roll Hall of Famers?
You have not.
Okay.
Detail.
All right. So I think this is actually a fairly interesting idea because, like, with sports, we got, like, achievement checklists that we basically go through before we decide to put somebody in the Hall of Fame. And one of them, of course, like for a lot of people, is longevity. You know, it's very rare that you get a guy that has a really short career and they still make the Hall of Fame. You get like Gale Sayers, Terrell Davis, and Terrell Davis, there was a lot of controversy about whether or not he was going to wind up making the Hall of Fame because he did not have that longevity. But Guns N' Roses can do Appetite for Destruction, and they had some, you know, they did the Lies EP after that, the User Illusion stuff, the Spaghetti Incident, okay, cool. But they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame based off Appetite for Destruction. They ain't have to do nothing else, right? It was such an impactful moment. Sex Pistols is another example in that one. The 3-year recording career of Jimi Hendrix, these are examples there. Nobody would doubt or question that Jimi Hendrix is some variety of Hall of Famer. I would dispute it on the Sex Pistols, but anyway, nobody would dispute that. There you go. You know, if you want to look at it in rap, you know, Biggie Smalls, man, that career, Ready to Die come out in 94. He's dead in 97, right? Like, we didn't have this super long career to talk about, but the impact of what he did was so, you know, in the short time was enough that there's no question that dude's a Hall of Famer. Like, that's the way we look at it. There's some athletes that are Rock and Roll Hall of Famers where just their impact and what they did when they were hot, what they did when they were on top is enough that even if they don't make the actual Hall of Fame, we're going to remember them forever just because they were so exciting in the moment when they existed, right? So Michael Vick, for me, would be an example of a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame athlete. I can't pull these stats up and have it make sense to you. Even if you look at what the Russian stats are and you see he had a 1,000-yard season, I can't make you get what this was by stats. I can't make you get what this was entirely by talking about team success or record or anything like this, right? But the impact that Michael Vick had and how memorable Michael Vick is to us, I mean, Dan Fouts is in the Hall of Fame. Dan Fouts ain't Michael Vick. Dan Fouts was definitely a better, like, overall NFL player than Michael Vick. But ain't nobody talking about Dan Fouts the way that we talk about Michael Vick. All right? There's a very particular impact that comes from that. You even get some guys like that in baseball. Like, Gabe, you're a Giants fan, right?
I'm a Dodger fan.
Oh, so you are a Dodger fan. But my man Lincecum, he's on the list. I loved everything about Tim Lincecum. And he was hot for a minute, right? And I will remember to talk about him in that way. Like, if Pedro Martinez never made the Hall of Fame, or Pedro Martinez never did anything after the year 2000, he'd be a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer just because of the way, like, how Pedro got down, like, everything about it. And I think with Zion, that may ultimately be what it is, because I don't know what the length of his career is going to be. And actually, my buddy Pablo had made this point. He's like, look, man, I'm just going to enjoy every single bit of it that I get. Every single bit. And there's something to that. Right? There absolutely is. Cause we are gonna, even if Zion only plays for like 2 years, literally 2 years, if we got 2 years of Zion being what we saw or anything close to that, we will talk about that forever, ever. And that'll mean more than getting into any damn Hall of Fame, right? You know, talking about championships and stuff like that. I don't root for none of these teams, so I don't care about that sort of situation. But like, I think about Connie Hawkins, and Connie Hawkins is in the Hall of Fame, clearly, but like, I think about the way my dad talks about Connie Hawkins, right? And you go talk to somebody who really cared about the NBA that is now in their like 70s or 80s. My dad's in his early 80s. So if you talk to somebody that's of that age range, I guess you could even say 62, but ask them about Connie Hawkins. Ask them about the Hawk. And you just see it wash over their faces. It's a whole nother ball game. It's like when my baseball, my daddy talk about Don Newcomb. It just washes all over his face. This is something completely different. Don Newcomb in the Hall of Fame? Nope. But it don't matter because he's in the Mac Jones Hall of Fame. Damn right. And he ain't alone in that. There's a bunch of them like that. And Zion, all the numbers seem to indicate that he could be a dominant NBA player. We have a lot of reason to think that it's going to be something that isn't that long. I do think that it is important for us to appreciate him for what he is and not for what he is not. Like that poor dude, Greg Oden, man. Greg Oden just couldn't keep his body together, right? We talk about him as a bust and everything else, and he really had a hard time coping with everything that came from him not being able to get it done in the NBA, because all we talk about Greg Oden is in the context of what he wasn't. Now, granted, we didn't get a whole lot of chance to see what he was, but we can lock ourselves into that, right? Because it's not like Greg Oden was terrible. You know, you don't have no memories of Greg Oden out here just getting sunned. You don't have that. But he didn't turn into what he thought we thought he was going to be. It's about what he was. And so with this one, man, let's appreciate this for what it is. Like, let us do that. And by the way, appreciating it for what it is means also not making him Greg Oden already. We don't have to do that. You know, guys have these kinds of injuries. It's not like a meniscus tear. It's not, you know, this isn't that rare. Maybe it's a harbinger of things to come. I don't know. But we can appreciate this dude for what he is or what he will be. And let us try to be careful to not get bogged down into what he's not. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Michael Jordan, you know, being Michael Jordan. But first, who doesn't want stress in their life? If high-interest credit card bills are adding to your stress, I got a solution for you. Pay off your credit card balances and save money with a credit card consolidation loan from my friends at LightStream. Get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. This is much lower than the national average interest rate of over 20% APR. Plus, your rate is fixed, so as rates continue to rise, your low rate won't budge. The online application is quick and easy. You can apply right from your phone, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. All right, so Michael Jordan has realized something in recent time. I'm not speculating on this. I know this to be true. There's a generation that don't really know nothing about no Michael Jordan. Like, they are aware of him, but they don't really know what this Michael Jordan thing is. They know the shoes and all of that stuff. But shoot, man, for all it's worth, man, Michael Jordan's like Chuck Taylor. I don't know nothing about Chuck Taylor, you know? Like, for a certain age group, a certain demographic of people, man, that's kind of what he is. So Mike kind of want people to know a little bit more about him. Mike's about to be a little more public. Mike out here doing some interviews. Mike out here doing nice things for other people. Mike gave some money to some hospitals. And so Mike out here trying to, you know, tell people to go get their flu shots. And so he went on the Today Show and, he, you know, did the flu shot and talked about the hospital and everything else. By the way, Gabe, Mike tried to say that the reason he ain't never talk about none of this stuff outside of basketball when he was playing basketball is because he was just so focused on basketball. Do you understand
that?
Right. Yeah. I feel like there's a whole lot of casinos with a different story than that. Right, this dude going to Atlantic City the night before playoff games, but you was just so focused on basketball, you couldn't do nothing for somebody larger than yourself.
He was focused. Yeah. All right. Yeah, he was focused.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Whatever you say, Mike.
But anyway, Mike was on the Today Show, and I'm not even exactly sure how this came up about Steph Curry. But he was, you know.
Well, so he was talking to Craig Melvin on the Today Show, and he said he'd keep the same four guys, Hakeem, Magic, Scotty, and James Worthy, to play against anyone with. But this is what happened next.
Would you keep the same four?
In a heartbeat. When I'm going in the trenches, I play against and with all these guys. I'm going with who I know. Every single night, that responsibility to go out there and represent greatness. Every single night.
So Steph Curry shouldn't be offended when he watches this.
I hope not. Yeah, he's still a great player. Not a Hall of Famer yet, though. He's not.
Cheers.
Cheers, my friend.
And then he clicked a glass on it. Right? Now, is it possible that Mike simply meant that Steph has not been inducted into the Hall of Fame? Is it possible that that's the only part that he meant? Or did he really say that Steph Curry has yet to reach the standard for the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame?
I did hear him say yet. Not a Hall of Famer yet, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm wondering, like, does he think Steph needs to work his way up to becoming a Hall of Famer?
Possibly. I mean, maybe there's still a couple of things that Steph needs to do in his career in order to reach that plateau.
Yo, how many people are in the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame?
One.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Who else is in the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame? So if Steph is not in the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame, is Scottie Pippen in the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame? Did he have Scottie on that four-man list?
He did.
Okay. So, okay, maybe he let Scottie into the Hall of Fame because Scottie knows somebody. You think he got Charles Barkley in the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame? Because I bet he don't.
Wasn't on that list of four.
Is that the entirety of the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame? Michael Jordan, those four guys, and like David Thompson, because that was his childhood idol?
That's a pretty strong four. But it's four.
It's four. Why is Michael Jordan like this?
No Tony Kukoc on that list.
There's not even Dennis Rodman, and they damn sure ain't no Horace Grant. I don't know if you ever seen, you know, the shot that John Paxson hit to win the 93 finals?
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever really watched it on that play, but the play was designed for Horace Grant. And what basically happened was Mike commanded a double team, bringing the ball up the floor. He whips it up to Scotty. Scotty whips it to the weak side. And I think that's when it gets to Horace, because now they got basically a 2-on-1. Well, you know, they had the numbers. Horace had the ball right by the rim, and his booty got tight, and he threw it right out to John Paxson. It's a good thing that John Paxson made it. But anyway, after the game, Adade tells me about this. They asked Mike about it, and Mike is like, yeah. Then the ball went to Horace, and Horace passed up the shot, which was unfortunate, and then keeps it moving, which was unfortunate. Bruh, you just won the championship. This was not necessary. But that is Mike being, like, the pettiest human being in the world. Why you have to flex on Steph like that?
From one North Carolina guy to another.
That's right. And you know what? The more I think about it, he definitely wasn't trying to say he simply is not inducted into the Hall of Fame. Actually, this is what's funny about it. Let's think about this. If he had said that about LeBron, we would automatically know and assume that he was saying that LeBron has simply not been inducted, right? Because there's no way you don't think LeBron James is a Hall of Famer at this point. That's what we would have thought. But since it's Steph, we raised the question as to whether Mike truly respects what Steph is out here doing. What do you think Mike think about Carmelo?
He's not in his top four.
Yeah, I mean, Carmelo is a Jordan brand athlete, don't get me wrong, but Carmelo ain't got no rings and all of that. I bet Mike be talking bad about Carmelo. Bad. Mike also said, by the way, in this interview, that he does not play pickup ball anymore, basically because he doesn't want to wake up the monster inside of him. That the cutthroat competitor in him must lay dormant. If he pokes it, then all of a sudden he's going to become that guy, and he can't be that guy anymore.
Remember when we taped that interview last year, which still hasn't seen the light of day because we are waiting for the right opportunity, about the guy who beat Jordan 1-on-1?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For another day, listeners.
That's right. I forgot we had not aired that one. Yeah, dude, I bet Mike be at that dude's house.
Well, you were talking about him hating on Jordan brand athletes. You kind of brought it full circle because Zion's a Jordan brand athlete.
He is a Jordan brand athlete. Oh, I have a great Michael Jordan story, and I will let you, Gabe, decide what parts to play the whole music over. All right, so I met a woman a few years ago, and I mean, I didn't like, not like I met a woman, right? But she is a woman, and I met her. And apparently, when she was younger, this is when Jordan was a rookie, and that Jordan had tried to get at her, right? Jordan tried to holler at her, and so.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
He can't let anything slide. Michael Jordan cannot let anything slide. Who knows? Steph signed that Under Armour deal, and suddenly he was dead to Mike. You think maybe that's what it is?
Well, was Jordan in the running at that time?
Nike was.
Yeah, it was just a Nike. Well, I mean, you're right. Nike's Jordan, kind of the same thing.
No, but here's the thing. But they do compete. Yeah. You know, here's my thing, though. What if Steph ain't no Jordan brand athlete because Mike just ain't really got no respect for his get down? Right? What if Mike look at Steph and be like, I'd shut him down?
I would love to know the process of selecting a Jordan brand athlete and whether or not Mike has anything to do with it.
Oh, I'm guarantee he does. Guarantee he does. You ain't putting nobody that Mike think is a sucker on Jordan brand. That ain't happening. The logo is him. You know what I'm saying? Like, that ain't what it's going to be. But, oh, my God. Mike, any story about Mike being petty, I am here for. Always, always here for any story about Mike being petty. Because I just can't figure out how he's at this point in his life and he's still like this.
I mean, he's at, like, he's at a hospital.
Yes.
And somehow this comes
yes.
up.
Yes! Yes! Have you ever seen some of the back and forth between him and Obama? Because Obama can't let nothing slide either. And so Mike had done this interview with Ahmad Rashad, because of course, right? And so Mike has done this interview with Ahmad, and Mike said that Obama was a bad golfer, right? He's like, I ain't saying nothing about him as a politician. I'm just saying he's a golfer. Like, that's what Mike says. They ask Obama about this at a press briefing, and Obama's like, he says something, and he goes, ah, da, 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 and he says, well, I think Michael should be plenty busy with the Bobcats. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Because neither one of those dudes can let anything slide. I'd love to watch them play dominoes. Like, I want to watch see them do something that neither one of them is that good at and see what happens. You think Mike got Obama in his Hall of Fame? Like the President Hall of Fame?
I would imagine he does. That's probably a different kind of Hall of Fame.
I don't know. Steph Curry can't make the Basketball Hall of Fame. Like, I want to know who else is waiting outside the club to get into the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame. Let's think here. There's guys where we just can't be sure whether or not Mike has looked at them and said, okay, you may gain entry. You think he let Patrick Ewing in?
I don't know. Well, what about, do you think Phil Jackson's in the Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Okay. Had to ask.
Yeah, I think he's okay with that. I feel like it might be okay with that. Except Phil might mess around and say something about Mike he don't like, and then he won't talk to him for years.
That's how he rolls.
Yo, Chuck said Mike wasn't doing a good job as an executive. He cut Chuck off for years. Like, you notice this, remember when Scottie Pippen said that LeBron was better than Jordan? You see how quick he turned that back around?
He's got his ears to the ground at all times.
Yeah, he don't let nothing slide. Steph Curry need to remember that. Okay, so story came across the timeline. Sports Illustrated reported that after Game 6 of the American League Championship Series, I almost said National League Championship Series because I still can't believe the Astros in the American League. But after this, Stephanie Abstinian of Sports Illustrated wrote a story that noted that three female reporters were in the clubhouse, and in the middle of the room, the general manager turned toward the three reporters. I'm going to read this word for word, actually. This is more than an hour after Jose Altuve won the Astros the pennant, the party in the Houston clubhouse still raged. Right fielder Josh Reddick was crushing vodka Red Bulls. Starter Garrett Cole smoked a cigar. Shortstop Carlos Correa gazed lovingly at the American League Championship trophy. And in the center of the room, assistant general manager Brandon Taubman turned to a group of three female reporters, including one wearing a purple domestic violence awareness bracelet, and yelled half a dozen times, "Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so glad we got Osuna." Now, for those of you who do not know who Osuna is, he is Roberto Osuna. He pitched for the Blue Jays. He's a very good closer. He faced an allegation of domestic violence that seems very, very credible. The prosecution could not take place because the mother of his child. They could not compel her to testify after she went back to Mexico and did not. And plea bargain, either way it goes, right? He was suspended 75 games. By Major League Baseball, it did not include the postseason, and the Astros went and got the most cynical open box special that there is. They made the decision that they were going to trade for him and to bring him to the team because a very good closer at a cheap price is hard to find. I am not offended by the idea that the Astros picked him up. I wasn't offended by that then. I'm not offended by that now. Maybe part of it is because of I've been defeated by a certain level of cynicism, but I look at this in large measure and I say, I've made peace with the reality that good things happen to bad people. You know, if the Astros are willing to incur the PR hit that comes from it, and if they are willing to deal with what happens if this man does this again, right? If they are going to do that, that's the risk that they are going to take. I understand why it is that they chose to do it. I understand that people make decisions like this for those they find to be exceedingly talented. I get all of those things. So it's not, I'm not offended by the idea that they would pick him up. I don't look at that as something that they need to answer for and explain for the whole time that he is there. Like, I do think when you pick a guy up like that, though, you need to have a very honest, sincere conversation with everyone, the city, fan base, whole nine, explaining that you have done this and what your standards are going to be from here on out, because clearly you stated the fact that he beat one woman isn't going to stop you from keeping him on the team. So what's going to happen if he beats a second? You know, like, I think you need to do those things. And I think that you can do those things in a way that can be deemed satisfactory. That's how I see it. I am not a fan of the idea of banishment under these circumstances. However, what is this guy doing throwing this up in people's faces? Right? Like, the thing that I say to you there about why, like, I'm not necessarily offended by the fact that the Astros would pick a guy like Osuna up, I don't say that, like, totally absent of shame, you know? Like, I say that with an understanding of, like, there's a level of judgment that I can see that somebody would cast upon me, and I think there are ways that somebody might think of me as a result, and I wouldn't want that. Like, I can live with it, but that's not something that I want. That's like, that idea isn't something that I feel good about. And this dude just stood up with no shame and did this. Now, the Astros put out a statement that said that this event did not go in the way that it was characterized, because Osuna had given up a home run in this game, and he was really just trying to be supportive of Osuna in this moment, but it wasn't directed toward these women. There have been other reporters who have said that this absolutely was directed toward these women. And there are two ways that I look at this when I see it. One is, if you are being coldly cynical about this, and you're the Astros and you've decided that winning World Series or getting the World Series is worth it so that you are willing to bring Osuna in, okay. But I would think that you would want to lay low on that. Like, lots of people, honestly, including me, because I don't pay attention to baseball as closely as I used to, I had kind of forgotten all about that. Now, here we are, man. We back and we talking about it. Why would you do that, right? Like, maybe they, I don't know, like, what they was doing to celebrate or whatever. Maybe they had him out here feeling a little too loose. I got no answer for you on that. But why in the world would you want to get this back cracking to where people are discussing it again, and now we're looking at you, and, yo, all the good feelings that you have about this all of a sudden feel a little different when you think a bit more about the way that the sausage is made? I think that's the case for a lot of people. They ain't have to do that. They could have got past that with nobody thinking about it. Hell, they won the World Series. No, they ain't have to do it. That's it. Period. They didn't have to do it. But then there's the other side of this. If this event went as the reporters have characterized it, what kind of hate do you have in your heart and soul to, like, look at a group of women and taunt them with the idea of your happiness behind the success of someone accused of beating the mother of his children? Like, if your thought process was, I'm going to look at them and I'm going to stick this to them, in this moment, right here, in front of all these people, what I'm thinking about when I see you is, I am going to try to taunt you about something that ain't no kind of funny. Really? What are you about? Like, you have zero shame. And on top of the fact that it's an indicator that you got zero shame, that just feels like an outright hatred for women. It does. Like, look, even if you view this purely cynically, right? Even if you view this simply as, hey, man, this guy can throw a baseball in a way that very few people can. And when you have a chance to get somebody who can throw a baseball like that, you can't pass up on it. Let's say that's how you feel about this, right? Even if that's the way that you feel about it, I would think that as you look at that woman with the domestic violence awareness bracelet on, you got to have a little twinge or something, right? You got to. Unless you just totally find this issue to be something not of concern. And I don't know how in the world you could possibly do that, given all the things that we've seen in the last 5 years. Like, we talked about that Ray Rice thing like it was a reckoning, right? And that was 5 years ago, and that happened. And I think that it prompted a lot of really important discussions, and we had these discussions all over the place. And I think that for a lot of people, they gained an awareness beyond just simply, it's wrong to hit, or, you know, you're not supposed to hit girls, which is, I think, just the kind of a basic axiom that people looked at it. But I thought that after that happened, for me at least, all these things got a much more human face to them. You know, like I was able to, beyond just thinking about them as just something simply, oh, wow, that's really messed up. You had people tell their stories. You had, you know, those who were children in homes with violent men who beat women tell their stories about seeing those things and how awful it was to see, and women who were courageous enough to come out and talk about the violence that they had suffered and the circumstances that led them to stick around with these men who beat them and treated them horribly. And, you know, it was such a statement on the fragility of being human. And that's generally, but specifically, it was such a statement on the danger that women live under at all times, even in the most intimate relationships with the people they love. Right? Like the idea that they are not safe with people who love them. And you're going to stand there and you're going to throw that in their faces like that? Like, if that's your get down, I don't see how the dude has a job. And I don't see how the dude has a job on the cynical tip, right? Like, cynically, like, hey, man, we had gotten past this and then you came out here talking this noise. That's enough to get you fired. Then we get to the point of just how, like, inhumane that was. But the Astros got his back. The Astros said this wasn't the way that it went at all, no matter how many of these reporters say it went another way. And you know what's real disturbing about this is, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the newspaper, but there's been a kind of widespread campaign going on of people who view journalists as being, as a group, not credible. That as a group, they are people who are not to be believed. And it feels like when somebody comes out and just says this, you know, all these people are lying, that that is being leveraged to manipulate a very particular group of people into feeling like there's just some giant lie that's out here. And here's the worst part about that when you think about it. If this went the way the reporter said, and I'm inclined to believe that it did, I'm just covering my bases because, you know, people can sue me for this stuff. If this went the way that these reporters said that it did, and then the team comes out and says that they're just making this up and that they're operating with an agenda, those women are being subjected to unfathomable levels of harassment. I really, like, legitimately hope that the Astros aren't doing that on a lie. Like, that would be as shameless as anything else if you were willing to do that on a lie. Because, look, man, people come at me crazy and stuff on the internet all the time. But in the end, there's a level of stuff they ain't going to do to me. There's a level of things they're not going to try with me that they will try with women. And so, hey, if you want to be a team that's got the assistant general manager who thinks that that's something to throw in people's faces, that's your call. If you want to be the team that is so willing to tell a lie that you're going to put people in harm's way, if that's how things went, then that's your call too. But we got to call that what it is, and it's indefensible. All right. This is the return of Sideline, a little limited edition series we're doing on booster culture in college football. Banner Society over at SB Nation is joining us with this. We appreciate them. The last installment we had was with Spencer Hall of Banner Society. And now joining us from ESPN, the SEC Network, 2003 national champion, Marcus Spears.
My man, Bo, what's up, brother?
What's going on, man?
Glad to be here, bro.
You was excited anytime to talk about this.
Anytime you hit me up, I'm excited, bro, to be honest with you, man.
Yo, I love this is one of our favorite topics. Yes. Like, I love, like, me and Spencer talk about this all the time. We're like, look, man, booster stuff around college football is the most entertaining.
It's
like,
so real.
The most entertaining thing. And you were a big-time recruit, big-time college football player. Now, I wonder this with you. When did you realize that, like, playing big-time college ball was in your future? At what point?
I think it was my junior year of high school, man. I start to, you know, you get the letters and you get questionnaires first. Mm-hmm. And, I got a couple my sophomore year, but my junior year, they start flooding in. And then I filled them out, went to a camp, and supposedly this camp ranked all the high school players. So I left the number one tight end in the country. I played tight end in high school. And then I started getting mail crates of letters.
Really?
Right. And then that's when the game changed. It was offers as opposed to trying to get to know you, and it was offers. So then I had the experience with my coaches of getting pulled out of class to meet Bobby Bowden and Nick Saban and Lou Holtz at the time. And I'm a football junkie. So I was like, damn, Bobby Bowden came to Southern Lab in Baton Rouge to meet with me. So that's when I knew. Junior year is when the mail crates start coming.
Now, see, you were in an interesting place, at least in the way that I look at things, in that you were from Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
There's no way that they can let you go anywhere but LSU, right?
Man, listen, Bo, it was so different. It's funny, man, when we had this conversation, because you know a lot about BR. And you know, I didn't grow up an LSU fan. I really was like, forget LSU.
No, you see, you know what? You have that age, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where it's only recent now that everybody's on the program.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, Southern University was the only college that existed for me.
Right.
In Baton Rouge. But I knew I wanted to play big-time college football. So for me, that was Florida State, Miami, Michigan. Travis Minor, Warwick Dunn had went to Florida State. We had a bunch of great players from Louisiana in general, or Baton Rouge, that went. Reggie Wayne went to Miami. Like, dudes wasn't going to LSU like that.
Right.
Right? I think Kevin Falk was like the tide turn guy that signed with LSU. Kevin Falk was like a god in Louisiana in football. And when he went to LSU, everybody's eyebrows raised and was like, okay.
Yeah, and people need to know, Randy Moss was the number one recruit that year.
Yes.
Kevin Falk was number two.
For sure. So he was the game changer, I would say, as far as kids looking at LSU. And then when Nick Saban came in and the recruiting pitch with Jimbo and just talking about what he was trying to do, I didn't know Nick Saban from Adam. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know Michigan State had a football team. Right. But when he came in, I just respected so much of what he said, because he technically told me, don't make a 4-year decision, make a 40-year decision. That was number one. I'll never forget that today. That's like one of the first statements he said to me. And he said, look, I know you are a All-American in high school. I know you're the number one tight end in the country, but you're going to have to earn your way to play. And no other coach said that. Every other coach was going to change their offense. I'm like, coach, you ain't through to the damn tight end in 7 years. Like, so now you found that guy. So it just changed for me in that regard.
Now, I asked this question. Around that time, is this when you start hearing from the grown-ups around town about how LSU is the place you need to go?
No question, dude. Every time you hit the grocery store, you find yourself in new places like the mall and people starting to recognize you. And LSU was just – it seemed like something about LSU came up every time I was in public.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, man, because for me, I was a kid that grew up in South Baton Rouge, which was 3-4 minutes down the street from LSU campus. I had never went on the campus. Like, that just wasn't my history. My grandmother lived in North Baton Rouge, Schuylerville, Louisiana, and that was right by Southern campus, and that was home for me. Like, I was comfortable. I knew my whereabouts, surroundings, everything. South Baton Rouge, where my mom lived, you know, I was in the neighborhood. Right. I wasn't really doing much on LSU campus. That was like the don't go place.
Right.
So, yeah, man, it was it's funny how that thing transitioned, man, because I was not – LSU was not the place for me.
How hard were they trying to get you?
Dude, it was so crazy, because here's the thing. The thing that Nick Saban changed was he was saying, if I let the number one tight end – and at the time we had the number two wide receiver, which was Michael Clayton. We had the number one defensive end in Louisiana, Marquise Hill. Andrew Whitworth was the number three offensive tackle. So this year was like all the players were in Louisiana. So his whole mantra was, man, if I let them out, we ain't going to ever recruit a good recruiting class, right? And he just – it was the spiel. It was like you could win a national championship. You can always come back to Baton Rouge. You could do whatever you want to do in this city if you have success and if you guys – put the work in. So that was his pitch. Like, don't make a 4-year decision.
Right.
Make a 40-year decision.
Right. And I imagine once you get on campus, now's when you start learning about these boosters.
Dude, let me tell you something. So you constantly trying to figure out, like, where all this money coming from? Like, where all these new buildings coming from? What the hell is in LSU case? What is Tiger Athletic Foundation? What is this, right? And then you start to see, like, millionaires and these dudes that got all kind of access to practice and being able to be in games and on the sideline. And, you know, as you become a player and I'm becoming an All-American, I'm starting to look around, especially my junior year when we won the national championship. I'm like, who are all these new people? and then was the dudes, the supporters of the program. And they just, you know, in whatever way they could support.
And then I guess you get to meet a couple of them. You're like, what's that dude do? Oh, he runs a bank.
Exactly. Right? Like, you know, it was a bunch of that, you know, and it was you have the staples. Like, I think in Louisiana, you had Lemoyne Company. That was a big construction company. You had Shaw Group. You had All-Star Chevrolet. You had, the owners of these places were big LSU boosters. So, you know, we built a new log cook facility. We built a hotel while all this transpired when I was on campus. Like, all of these new things. And you're like, damn, these dudes giving $3 million to the program. They're giving $1.5 million. You like, let me get some of that bread, man.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, because they try to keep, on one level, the NCAA wants to keep the boosters away from the kids, because they don't want the boosters to give the kids no money. But the whole reason that the boosters are around is because they want to be around the kids.
No question. Look, this is not, first of all, if you don't think this has been going on, you're stupid, right? You've been around ball. If you pay enough attention to college football, you know boosters play an integral part. And Bomani, I think the misconception is this. Boosters ain't handing players no checks.
Right.
Right. This ain't really happening like that. I tell people all the time, like, I didn't get a dime to go to LSU. Now, if I knew other dudes were getting money, I damn sure would have asked for some. But I didn't get a dime to go to LSU. There was no school that offered me a bag per se. So I always feel a little bit like dudes kind of embellishing or they lying flat out, period. It's hard and it happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but to say that this coach came with 50,000 in a duffel bag, that's stupid.
Or they ain't get that bag to you.
It was somebody else that matriculated down to you. But jobs, you know, I was in school when the NCAA first allowed players to work. So I had a job and I worked. I ain't naming no names, but money, because I ain't throwing them under the bus. But I worked. And I would go in, and I would literally do my hours because it was a job that I liked. But I know cats that wasn't there getting paid. Like, it is what it is. And I think a lot of times, man, I've always had this, and as we talk about this pay for play and as we have these conversations, I've always had in the back of my mind that we should be able to profit off of that.
Right.
You don't look at it like that.
Well, the thing that always gets me about those dudes is, to a degree, they just feel like doing it, right? Because it seems like, because once you're already on campus, they don't really have to do anything for you. Like, cats seem to, like, really, and, you know, sometimes it's a little weird, right? Because I imagine you got some hangout invitations that were like,
Let me tell you this. This is actually the deterrent. Now, you got some dummies in college that do it. This is the deterrent. And I tell players this now. Dude, once you take bread from them, you in bed with them.
Yep.
Like, that's what players have to understand. But money to, bro, I got offered bags in college after I became an All-American, successful. And, like, dudes, like, whatever you want, Marcus, you want a car, you want whatever you want. And I never took it because I didn't want to be in bed with them. What this mean, right? I was born of that, like, I was from those type of neighborhoods where people just don't give you stuff.
Right.
Without an expectation for you to do something later or whatever. So I think for me, that's what kept me individually out of it. And I know a lot of dudes that I went to school with, that's what kept them out of it. Like, dude, if a dude give you a $60,000 car, if he give it to you, right?
Right.
He expect you to do something when you make it.
Right.
Like, that's understood. Like, this is not just about the success you having in college. So I think a lot of times that deters players more than anything. And then you got guys in desperate situations that's like, man, forget it. I need this.
Right. Like, what was the weirdest thing that a booster wanted to do? Because they've asked you how to come to birthday parties. Bro, and all this stuff.
So this dude wanted me to come to his daughter's Sweet 16. Now I'm 18. Right? And he wanted me to come to his daughter's Sweet 16 party. And I'm like, yo, I can't come to that party. Like, these girls are, like, I'm 18 now.
Right.
Like, this is not, and it's in my age demographic. It ain't that part. And I'm like, damn, man, I would love to go though. I would love to go because she gorgeous. Right. I would love to go.
But what's so funny about that is that can't be what she wanted for her Sweet 16.
That ain't what she wanted. Exactly. And at the time, my mate, I'm not thinking that. I'm like, yo, like, listen, I'm not going because I don't want you, you know, whatever. I don't want to get in trouble. And I don't want that, all that to be out. Because once you do that, that word of mouth, and they going to be like, Marcus was at our party. And there ain't no reason in hell for me to be at the party.
Right.
Other than your daddy love LSU and he got me to come. So It was that was probably the weirdest thing. And then I thought he was trying to do like a fixed marriage situation too. So I'm like, dude, like I'm not coming over there to meet your daughter at a sweet 16. So that was, for me, that was weird, but you always get asked for, you know, birthday parties or come meet these guys that is, you know, standing on the sideline, or they, I got some guys on campus. Can you come shake their hand and say hello and take pictures? You always get asked that. But monetarily, bro, I tell you something, bro, what kept me too, man. My mom told me when I was trying to decide whether I was going to go to the draft or not, right? My junior year, I had a great year. We won national championship. Everybody was on their high horse. I was like, Mom, if you need me to go, because we ain't had no bread. We ain't had no money. My mom was like, I was like, do you need me to go? Like, I'll go if you need me to go. And she was like, boy, I've been broke 20 years. One more year ain't going to hurt us, right? So that's what really summed it up for me. But I saw a lot of dudes have to jump because they had to take care of their people, or they were so afraid of having to take money from boosters and dudes that was offering them things that they just didn't want to deal with it. So they go to the league, and all of that becomes legal. Here's the thing players need to understand about boosters, though. Once you go to the league, they on to the next.
They don't know you.
They don't know you. They don't know. They can't know you. Right? Or you have those ones that's like super overzealous and they want everybody to know what they did for you. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, you play Russian roulette with it.
Yeah. Like, how much room do you have to tell those guys no on stuff? Like when they want you to do something while you're
in
school?
You have so much room because you can always use the NCAA. Right? But you don't want to. Think about it, Bo. Like, think about this, man. I'm going to give people this scenario for say, oh my God, these players are so great. You're 16 years old. You're in a situation, like I was. You're 16 years old, your mama working her butt off, trying to take care of a single parent, trying to take care of you and your sister. And a booster tell you, hey man, we'll pay you $5,000 coming to a birthday party. What you gonna do? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
These are the things that the NCAA and people that don't have that dilemma expect you to just be easily saying, no, I don't wanna do that. Are you crazy? Like, dog, when I was 17, I thought $5,000 was life-changing money.
Yes.
Right? So for somebody to ask me that, for me to turn it down, the only reason is because my mom would always tell me, like, don't go out there and do nothing for nobody that you don't know, or don't take nothing from nobody that you don't know, because they going to come back and ask for it.
Dog, you talking about $5,000. I remember I had an internship when I was 21. And that internship paid $5,400 a month. Right. In 2002. So I ain't never heard nothing like this in my life. And I got it. My first paycheck was a 1 week check, and it was for $1,000. And I looked at it and I looked at my dad and I said, and I did not grow up anywhere close to broke.
Right.
I looked at that check and I looked at my dad and I said, see this? This how people sell out. That's what I thought about $1,000, right? Like $1,000. So I can imagine somebody walking up with me with five
to do nothing. And you 17, dog. Like I thought, dude, at 17, I thought $5,000 could buy you a house and a car. Like that was exactly. I was like, I can get a house and a car if I go to this birthday party. But hell no. You either selling your soul, or it all work out where you don't. I went to Lester Earl was in school before me.
Oh, Lester.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And Lester took money and rolled on everybody. On everybody. And that's the Russian roulette you play.
You know, Lester Earl Jr. is now playing college ball, yeah. Which made me feel very,
I'm
very
just glad
old.
He don't have to take no bread. Hopefully.
Yes, you'd hope, right?
Yeah.
There was another one. Tony Cole. That was the other Baton Rouge dude that set the house on fire.
Oh, man.
He set Georgia on fire.
Golly, bro.
So, because the schools, I think they're in an interesting position, too, because the boosters are the money.
Yep.
And so, as much as they might want to try to rein these dudes in, how do you tell the money no?
You can't. You can't. And that's the thing, man. Like, the thing about it is, it's two separate entities that work for one common goal, right? They have their way of going about it. The school has their way. Well, the school has their guidelines,
yes,
of going about it. So it's almost like they try to disassociate themselves when it comes to the black market. But you can't, because the same dude that's over there trying to get your star player to come to a birthday party so he could justify giving them whatever is the same dude that's going to be at the games on the sideline with access to the head coach and the coaches because he's donating so much money to the program. So to try to differentiate that as a player, to try to separate the two when both of them are really looking for the same thing, right?
Right.
It's just hard to decipher. So, you know, that's why you gotta, dude, you gotta have level head. I'm trying to teach a little bit too while we talk about, you gotta have a level head and you gotta have the ability to say no. Because the moment you say yes, you in.
Yeah.
You in. And then you subject it to, you don't even have to piss the booster off. The school can piss the booster off and the booster like, oh, I did this for all of them. And now you in a situation. But I ain't saying it don't happen.
Yeah, I wonder also, because that was before Saban had all this clout, right?
Yeah.
That's back when he had to put up with those dudes.
Exactly.
Because I bet he ain't got to do it now.
Nah, the more you establish yourself as a coach, you could tell them, look, I don't want you around my program. Practice off. Like, can't nobody come to practice. So you got to earn it. But as a new coach that's trying to get ingrained and embrace the culture and the atmosphere, you gotta play the game.
And Saban didn't know really nothing about the South at this point. I remember him telling a story about going to one of those clubs that you go, you know, around town.
Yeah.
And some old lady raised her hand and was like, if I see another corner 7 yards off the line of scrimmage, I'm going to kill somebody. It's like somebody's granny. And that's when he realized, oh,
it's real,
this place
downhill
is different.
Yeah, yeah. And he still regrets, I don't care what nobody say, he still regrets leaving LSU.
LSU would be Miami if Saban.
For sure. Because
it's a lot easier to win at LSU than it is to win at Alabama.
No question.
Right?
No question at all. And if he would have got Drew Brees, he might have not ever been at Alabama.
Oh, that was his.
He was trying to get Drew. Remember they got Dante Culpepper?
That's right.
Yep.
They
wanted Drew, but they wouldn't clear Drew because of the shoulder.
Yep.
But that's the thing. Like when Nick, we all came in green. I tell people that all the time. Like, we literally built LSU from being a program where good players came through every once in a while to the class before us with Brady James and Corey Webster and Trell Faulk. We, a bunch of dudes that had success, went to the league and played well. 2001 changed everything for LSU, though.
SEC championship year.
Yeah, man. That was Saban. That was Rohan David. That was Josh Reed. That was the number one recruiting class in the country. It was everything. And the foundation for the 2003 national championship we won was all 01 guys being veterans and understanding their role.
Yeah, and people don't get, if you're of a certain age, you don't know this. LSU has not always been good.
Oh, you kidding me, dog? But, Monty, we never talked about LSU.
No, ever.
Pre-98, when they had the big win against Florida, I think, or something like that, 96, maybe 96 or 98, whenever. Whenever Kevin Faulk went there, and they had them big wins, that's when people started saying, oh, LSU, LSU. And then when I went to my first game, I was like, damn, this is a crazy good atmosphere. But they still wasn't, like, quite over the hump.
Yeah.
Winning a few games, you could see that Saban was a good coach and all of that. But 01, it was like, all right, we all in now.
They needed to get a little farther away from the bad old days of segregation.
Because what
you talk about with Southern is the way, like, my whole people's side is,
yes, is
like an LSU thing.
LSU
is very
went
new.
Black.
Yep.
The AD right there, the AD right now at LSU, Scott Woodward. Scott was there. He might have been the associate AD at the time. Skip Berman was the AD. LSU wasn't no place black dudes wanted to go. Not from Louisiana.
Mm-mm. That's how Texas was. That was the issue. Texas has won 7 outright conference championships in 45 years.
Seven.
Dude. And that's because it took a long time before
long
they wanted
time.
To go there.
Well, dude, I'll never forget, man. We was the year we won the national championship, we had one white dude starting, Jack Hunt. That was an anomaly.
Yeah.
Everybody saw the turn, but at the same time, Nick Saban, Scott Woodward, Jimbo Fisher, they didn't hide from that.
No.
They knew it was some bad racial problems. They knew it was this whole demeanor that black athletes from Louisiana that were elite didn't want to go to LA. They knew all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So they did their homework. They was like, we got to get these dudes.
Yo, Nick Saban trying to win these games. Like, I remember when Blake Sims started at Alabama, and there would be people I'd see, you know, random people on Twitter, so I don't want to act like it's too many of them. They'd be like, oh, man, you know, Nick Saban down at Alabama, he don't want that. I'm like, nah, I don't think you really understand what we talking about here with this dude. He ain't got no time
ain't
for
no time
none
for
of that.
No time.
He had Rohan Davey out there in 2001.
Chopping that thing. You heard me? When Blake Sims broke records.
Yes.
At Alabama, dog. You better look, one thing you ain't never got a question about that man. He out there trying to get that dub, cause it don't matter about nothing else.
One last thing before we get out of here. you came up in the SEC. Do you, like, and people say it's just different in the SEC. And in this space, do you think it's fiercer in the SEC with the booster world than it is in these other places?
It's not even close.
Really?
Not even close. Think about it, Bo. Just from a geographical standpoint, how many SEC towns got pro football teams?
Right.
That's all you need to know. The reason why I firmly believe Vanderbilt struggles because there's so much other entertainment there, right? When you go to Alabama, you're going to play football.
Yeah.
You ain't going to – what you going to Alabama for? When you go to Mississippi, what you going to Mississippi for? You know what I'm saying? You right. know me, dog. Look, I go to these – I grew up in Louisiana. I'm not trying to throw shade on Bama or Mississippi. I grew up in Louisiana where the LSU Tigers are bigger than the New Orleans Saints.
Right.
I don't care what nobody say. Right now, as good as the Saints are, if you polled and said what's more important to you – who wins and who loses, people going, it'll be 95-5 LSU, right? You look at all of these, South Carolina, you look at Georgia, you look at, like, dude, it's not even close, bro.
Oh, yeah, in Georgia, the Falcons whole steeds is a UGA impression.
That's it.
They hold you, like, they basically were like, we're going to make the Pro Bowl.
You better
Bulldogs.
Embrace it. You better embrace these SEC schools right. if you're going to have success.
And Georgia wasn't even good.
No.
they weren't even good. No. They were like, this is what we're going to be. We're going to put you in black, silver, and red. And we're going to try to, make this happen.
It's not even close. It's not even close. The Saints seat 70. LSU seat 105. Like, play a game on the same day. That's what I tell people all the time. Let them play a game on the same day. It'll be a bad look down there in New Orleans.
Hey, man. That is Marcus Spears. Check him out, ESPN, SEC Network. My man, you know I appreciate it.
As always, bro.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man, Gabe Bassain, handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, Lightstream. Also, thank you again to Banner Society for joining us in our sideline feature. We will continue this in a couple of weeks with Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation. Wrote a great story about bag men, and we're going to talk to him about that. Also, be sure to check out the Mita Kimes show featuring Lenny, her dog. She chats with Phil Yates about week 8 in the NFL. Download, subscribe to the Mita Kimes show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.